Hey there, MCrate listeners. Sorry this one is coming out late. I just got back from CastleFest, which was an incredible conference. Got to meet all sorts of masters in all things ultrasound. Got to drink lots of bourbon and rye. Got to see incredible lectures on things like TEE, nerve blocks, all sorts of amazing stuff. But now I am back, and as promised, we're going to discuss the good side of sodium bicarbonate. We bashed it last time. This time, let's talk about when you should be using it. Before we get to that, I got an email. Actually, it was a comment on the last post from Owen, an anesthesia registrar. And he brought up this physiological quandary, which is, you know, we had made the comments that if you don't increase your minute ventilation, that the patient is not going to get the alkalinizing effects of sodium bicarbonate. And he said, well, okay, so the reason for that is that your PaCO2 will go up, and therefore, until that's fixed, you're not going to get the alkalinizing effects. But if your PaCO2 does go up, then that increases your alveolar CO2, and each breath you take, if you look at the end tidal, it's going to be higher than it was, and doesn't that mean that with each breath, you're actually eliminating more CO2, and that in its own, without any increase in minute ventilation, will take care of the problem. And, you know, I listened to that, and intuitively it sounded wrong, and yet by the concept, it's like, wow, where am I going to rip this apart? Because I don't, what he's saying makes total sense, and it was driving me crazy. So I reached out to David Story, who is a brilliant physiology master and the chair of anesthesia at the Melbourne Medical School down in Australia, and he wrote me back with an explanation that mathematically explained this all. So if you want to see that, it is in the show notes, and I think it's worth taking a look at because it really, it's a tough concept to work out just by moving around words in your head, so you got to see the math to understand this. So when should you use sodium bicarbonate, or as both Dr. Kellum and Dr. Story call it, chloride-free sodium? Well, let's go through the reasons. Now, I think the best indication, the one where no one is going to argue, is in sodium channel blockade toxicity, things like tricyclic antidepressants. And I'm not going to discuss that very much now because I'm actually going to do the next podcast on tricyclic overdose. So we will leave the use of sodium bicarbonate for that situation for 2 weeks from now. All right, let's talk about some other indications. Non-SIG acidosis or hyperchloremic acidosis. This is a good use of bicarb because the only derangement that's going on is that either iatrogenically or because of renal problems, the patient got too much chloride and now you're going to give a chloride-free solution that will balance things out and it's going to make the pH better. And we don't know if this makes the patient better, but it's certainly not going to make them worse as long as you don't overshoot. And it makes more sense than giving something like sodium chloride that's just going to make the problem even more exacerbated. So in non-SIG acidosis, there's two ways you could use it. If the patient needs IV fluids, then you could just use a bicarbonate IV fluid. And the way we classically make that is we take a liter of D5W or a liter of sterile water if that's available. It's not to me, but if you have that, that's even better. And you put in 3 amps of sodium bicarbonate. Now, depending on whether you have the 50 milli equivalents in 50 mLs or the 44.6 milli equivalents in 50 mLs will vary as to whether that is a slightly hypotonic or slightly hypertonic solution, but it all washes out in the end. And so you could just use that as an IV fluid. You could just give that just as you would normal saline or lactated ringers, and just use that as your way of resuscitating the patient. Now, I don't think there is necessarily any problem with pressure bagging it in, but I wouldn't just if you have the D5W solution, because generally we don't like to pressure bag in sugar-containing solutions. The patient get a headache and such, but if you had to, I don't think it would really cause any real problem, but generally we just let these drip in when we mix it up in D5W. Now, if the patient doesn't need a ton of fluid, then we will usually run these as a drip. And so we'll take that same mix of 3 amps and a liter of something and put it up on a pump and run it at, you know, maintenance or double maintenance. So something like 200 cc's an hour. And that will correct the patient's chloride excess at the same time it's giving them a reasonable physiological amount of fluid. Now, if they are already getting other drips and other various things and they're in an intensive care unit, then the concept of maintenance fluid is probably crap and the patient gets more than enough from all the things they're getting in the course of the day. So just understand that if you have a patient you feel is fluid replete and now you're down on a bicarb drip, they might eventually get fluid overloaded. But we're using relatively small amounts. We're using it for a fixed period of time, so it's usually okay. All right, that was the non-SIG acidosis. Let's talk about SIG acidosis, aka anion gap acidosis. Not a great idea to try to correct these things with sodium bicarbonate because there's an ongoing problem. That's what's causing the issue, and that should be resolved. That should be fixed, and you shouldn't try to temporize with sodium bicarb to make the pH better because if it's a rapidly resolving problem once you treat them, for instance, DKA, then they're going to have an overshoot. And if it's not, then you should still be treating the source. But if you want to use that same, 3 amps in a liter of something as an IV fluid for a patient who still needs active fluid resuscitation, I don't think that's a bad idea at all in a SIG acidosis. The thing is that any of the fluids you give that are balanced solutions, meaning that they're not going to make the patient more acidotic, for instance, lactated Ringer's or Plasmolite, they're going to need to be converted to bicarbonate, the buffer bases in them, to get their effect anyway. So if you wanted to use just straight up bicarbonate, that is fine. And you could use this as an IV fluid. Now you might be thinking, well, why for both of these disorders, the non-SIG acidosis and the SIG acidosis, don't we just have bicarb containing solutions already mixed for us if they have to be converted to bicarbonate anyway for things like the lactate and lactated Ringer's or the acetate and Plasmolite to work? And the reason is that bicarbonate is not shelf stable in plastic. And what happens is CO2 leaches in and actually converts the bicarbonate to a non-alkalotic situation. It converts it to other forms of carbonic acids. And as a result, they eventually are no longer bicarb containing solutions and they no longer work the way you want them to. When you use a bicarbonate dialysate in a renal replacement therapy, you actually have to in real time, mix that up. You actually have a glass bottle full of bicarbonate that drips in at the same time as a plastic bag full of fluids and makes the final fluid just as it's hitting the dialysis machine. And so you cannot have shelf-stable plastic bags full of bicarbonate-containing solutions. This is why you have to mix it up real time. This is why they have the buffer bases. So if you want to make ready-made IV fluids with bicarbonate in them to use in a SIG acidosis, that's just fine. And you could do an alternation. You could do a liter of normal saline, a liter of this bicarb drip, a liter of normal saline, and that's a great way to go. It's certainly a much smarter way to go physiologically than slamming in bicarbonate. So that's 3 reasons we've discussed thus far: sodium channel blockade, non-SIG acidosis, and SIG acidosis. All right, next up, increased ICP, increased intracranial pressure. Ordinarily, we would use either mannitol if the patient's blood pressure is sky high, or hypertonic saline if their blood pressure is low or normal. But let's say you don't have the hypertonic saline, or let's say the patient's already profoundly acidotic. Sodium bicarbonate could absolutely be used in lieu of 3% hypertonic saline. And there's been 2 studies on this. One was an RCT, and they used 85 cc's of 8.4% sodium bicarbonate. They infused it over 30 minutes, and it was equally as effective as hypertonic saline. Now, in every other hyperosmotic solution we use for ICP, whether it be mannitol or hypertonic saline of whatever concentration you want, we always give it over 10 minutes. I see no reason you have to give it over 30 minutes. You give it over 10. 85 cc's of 8.4% is basically the same thing as 2 amps of the 44.6 milliequivalent per 50 cc's that I have, which is 7-something%. If you wanted to give 2 amps of the 8.4%, I think that's fine as well. And you just give them over around 10 minutes. How would I do this logistically? I'd grab a 100 cc bag of saline. I'd put in the 2 amps of bicarbonate, or it could be 100 cc's of D5W, whatever you have, it doesn't really matter. And I would just let that drip in. And that's going to go in around 10 to 15 minutes without even putting it on a pump. And if it went in a little quicker, if it went in over 8 minutes, it's not really an issue at all. So don't stress about this. And this is a great way to go because everyone always has sodium bicarb amps available, whether it's in their little code boxes of meds or in a med cart somewhere, but generally this is available because it's an emergency medication. So if you have a patient who, starts looking like their ICP is increasing, their pupils blowing on one side, and you can't get access to 3% rapidly, which is our standard thing to use, then just grab 2 amps of bicarb, throw it into a bag of something, and let it drip in, and this will work well. And the two articles for this are in the show notes. They're both in the neurocritical care literature. This is very, very cool. Next up, hyperkalemia. Now, I did an entire podcast on this, and you should go listen to that if you haven't, if you want to find out more about the treatment of hyperkalemia. But a lot of people have bicarb in there. Bicarb pushes don't really do very much good here. And I don't even know if giving a bicarbonate drip is going to do much good if the patient is anuric. But if the patient can make some urine, then what's a very cool thing to do is mix up your standard bicarbonate drip, you know, the 3 amps in a liter of something. Put it on a pump because we don't want to, you know, give unregulated amounts of fluid to a renal patient with a tenuous status, but give it in a pump and give some reasonable amount. Maybe give them 500 cc's and then give them some furosemide as well, which is a potassium wasting diuretic. And now the furosemide is going to make them pee out potassium. You're replacing the fluid they're peeing with a bicarbonate drip, which has no K in it, and is not going to make them more acidotic, which will increase their hyperkalemia potential. So this is a very nice way to go. Fluids plus furosemide will certainly give a lasting decrease in their potassium, as opposed to most of the other stuff we do, which is just intracellular shift. And since we don't necessarily know if K-exalate works, this may be a better way to go for a patient who could still make urine. In a patient who's anuric, you could still give a little bit of this. I would be careful how much you give, but it will make things a bit better if not, by no other mechanism than dilution. And I think the alkalinizing effect will help as well. So that was hyperkalemia. I should say as an aside, and I've been meaning to do a wee on this, there was a study that looked at this in a pediatric population, and they made like a magical hyperkalemia drip. And they took what essentially was a bicarbonate fluid, and they added some calcium, and they added some insulin, and they added some dextrose. And what they came up with it was something that you could just put on a drip pump and just keep running, and it will continuously cause the K to maintain its intracellular position and therefore not come back out because this is going continuously and potentially block the heart from any negative effects with the calcium. And if they are peeing, you know, they now have a bicarbonate containing solution. It's friggin' brilliant. And the problem I had with it is actually compounding this stuff was really tough. They had it made up in their pharmacy, and I don't know how you would do it in real time in an ED if you didn't have a pharmacy that would do this. But this should be the future, especially now that we don't believe in K-exalate. So I will do a wee on that and put out this article, and then we could discuss it in the comments. But I think it's a really cool potential way of treating hyperkalemia until they're able to get their dialysis. All right, now the last good potential use I could think of for sodium bicarbonate is hyponatremia in a patient who's either seizing or has just gone comatose and their mental status is looking horrible. This was, I was reminded of this by a listener, James Ritas, and he wrote this in one of the comments, and this is a great thing. And it's the same thing as with the ICP. You don't have the 3% available to you, and you want to treat a, you know, the lab just came back, the sodium is 104, that's why the patient's seizing, and you want to just terminate this. Giving 50 cc's of sodium bicarbonate is probably the way to go in these patients, and I would, again, let that drip in over some amount of time, probably around 10 minutes. It's tough when you have a seizing patient to wait that long, and if you wanted to, I guess you could push it. I wouldn't. I don't ever want to increase the sodium that quickly. Because all of the literature says, you know, it should go in over some reasonable amount of time, but so maybe a slow IV push or a drip over 10 minutes or so. And there's no literature for this at all, so just bear that in mind. It's just, there's no reason it shouldn't work, but 50 cc's of 8.4 or 7 point whatever percent is going to be essentially the same as 100 cc's of 3%, which is what I give in a seizing hyponatremic patient. And if you don't have that available, you always have the bicarb. So this is a good use. Now, just as a bonus, if you have those patients who come in, maybe they're a bit inebriated and someone thought it was a good idea to take off their shoes and then the smell of foot permeates your entire ED, if you squirt both of their socks with some bicarbonate, the smell-producing bugs are all acid-based. That environment, that milieu of stink is an acid-based environment. And sodium bicarbonate will alleviate the burden on the staff of the horrible stink throughout your ED. So that's another potential use. Now, I don't know if that is a good cost-effective use. I don't know how much an amp of sodium bicarbonate costs. But if it is cheap as dirt, then this is a good use because it will make everyone much happier than for instance, pushing sodium bicarbonate in an acidotic patient. Let's talk about some problems with using bicarbonate as a therapy. It will cause hypokalemia. Now, in the hyperkalemic patient, that's considered a bonus. But in the patient with a normal or low K, if you start using bicarbonate drips as IV fluids, eventually the patient will get hypokalemia. And then you're like, okay, well, I'll replace that. And the way you're going to replace it is with KCL. And if you are giving KCL, you're actually sending them back towards acidosis because KCL is essentially sodium-free chloride. Because what happens is the K predominantly gets absorbed intracellularly and just leaves the chloride, and now you're back to where you were. Now, it's interesting. I'm not sure what effect the oral KCL will have, whether all that chloride gets absorbed or not. I would imagine it does, and it's going to have similar effects. But just be aware that if you give them a whole bunch of bicarbonate and then you have to give them back whole bunch of KCL, that's going to basically put you back to where you were. Now, by the same token, they will get hypocalcemic, and that's going to be a problem, especially in a hemodynamically tenuous patient. So if you have to replace them with calcium chloride, then that's going to be a problem because calcium chloride is going to give them a chloride load. I don't think calcium gluconate is going to be as readily administered, but that might be a better way to go if you really want to keep these patients from getting acidotic again. So when shouldn't you use bicarb? Well, you probably shouldn't use it in cardiac arrest unless the patient has hyperkalemia or a presumed toxicologic cause. I think the lack of evidence is pretty striking for the use of bicarbonate as an empiric treatment in cardiac arrest. Now, there was always some discussion in the critical care universe that eventually the patient's pH gets so low that they no longer will have a response to vasopressors, whether endogenous or exogenous. And the literature for that just didn't bear out. This does not seem to really work out for people. It doesn't mean it's not true. It just means the evidence hasn't really supported it yet. So if you're giving bicarbonate solely because you think you're going to get a huge hemodynamic boost, there is no evidence for that at all. It doesn't mean it's not true. Just means when this has been looked at, it wasn't borne out. But all of the evidence for this is scant. All right, so we talked about all the good times you can use sodium bicarbonate. Sodium channel blockade as a drip in non-SIG acidosis, as an IV fluid in SIG acidosis, as a substitute for 3% in both increased ICP and hyponatremia, and as an IV fluid in hyper-K. If you could think of any others, please come on over to mcrit.org, find this show, and put it in the comments. That's where all the show notes are as well. This is Scott Weingart, recovering from CastleFest 2013, saying bye-bye.